It was just an awesome night, and it's just a start, though. That's what we were just talking about in the locker room. All it is a great start. At the end of the day, all we've done is accomplish our first goal, and that's win the opener. I mean, it was a huge win, but all we've done is win the opener. I mean, we got a long way to go. We got a lot of work to do, and I can't say enough about just the atmosphere that we had from the time we got off the bus to the time that we went out into the stadium. I mean, it was electric. It was a magical night in the Valley. That's what I would say. It was just magical.
Well, we started with the Dabo Swinney quote last time around, and we're starting with one this time around, too. You just heard him. Dabo, again, very excited for a big win against a top 10 SEC opponent.
Big win.
Two games in a row that they've pulled that off. So obviously something to be excited about.
Absolutely.
And a really good game to kind of highlight this opening weekend of college football.
Right.
And so with that, we are the Fourth and Short podcast. My name is Will Patton, and I'm joined by
Andrew Brown.
Once again, here to talk about college football in the ACC and the SEC. This is if you're new to the show, we're new to the show too, Andrew. This being the third episode we've recorded, but
I feel like we've been here so long, though.
I know, you know, it just feels like
new,
forever.
Yeah, we're new and yet so old.
Exactly. So this episode, we're going to do two episodes a week, and we did one a few days ago. Now it was kind of like the pre week one, and this is more like post week one. And let it be known that we were recording this just mere hours after Saturday's games.
Still fresh in our minds.
Still fresh in our mind, right. But yet we have not been influenced yet by the media.
Right. I haven't turned on ESPN.
I haven't read, you know, too many ESPN articles. I haven't watched, you know, any of that stuff. So this is fresh stuff here. So
I think that's important.
That's important. This is real insight from the semi experts that we are. So Andrew, let's just jump right in.
Absolutely. Let's go for it.
Obviously, the game of the week for this week is the UGA Clemson game. Right. What do you think about the game? Like, what are your initial impressions after watching that game?
I think there are a couple things.
Well, first of all, let me just ask you this then.
Right.
Did it live up to the hype? How about let's start out with that question. Did it live up to the hype?
I mean, for me, it did. I mean, if it's a close game, it's going to live up to the hype. You know, if it's close, which it was, down to the wire, that's what you want.
Oh, yeah.
You're still watching in the fourth quarter, that's what you want. So, yeah, I mean, I think it absolutely lived up to the hype. And, you know, my thing is what did I say before? Not to toot my own horn here, but I did say that home field advantage is going to play a factor.
Yeah,
it
and
did.
I think there's a lot of things that we can look at the stats and several individual game-defining plays where you
right.
can point to home field advantage having a crucial role in the outcome of those individual plays, which led to the Clemson win. They won 38-35. Came down to an onside kick at the end of the game, so it was, you know, the game was right there until the end. I mean, UGA was never out of the game. It came right down to the very end.
Back and forth the whole time. You know,
oh, yeah.
every team they seem to have an answer for each score, really. And even to the point where they were scoring touchdown, 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 then Clemson scores a field goal. Georgia looks like they're about to do the exact same thing. So the whole game, it seemed like each team had an answer.
They were matching each other.
Matching for each other, exactly.
Punch. Yeah. Punch and both of the offenses, I mean, they looked really good. Clemson had 545 yards of total offense. UGA had 467. Both the quarterbacks looked pretty good passing the ball. The running games were good as well, but I think the passing was...
You're running to set up the pass.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
a play-action type situation, and they did what they wanted to do. And, you know, my thing is that take the losing team first in the University of Georgia. In my opinion, you don't have a whole lot to hang your head about.
No.
You lost the game. You went into a hostile environment. the season's not over. That's the thing. The season's not over. You don't lose the whole season after one game.
No, you don't. Me and Andrew watched the game with some Georgia fans, and I think one of the things that a lot of Georgia fans are going to do over the next several days is they're going to question play calling, because there seemed, and a lot of the points in the game where it seemed like Georgia's offense was getting bogged down, it seemed like they were doing some running plays that were just, you know, dying up the middle, where they were just, the running backs were basically running into the defensive line and just nothing was happening. And then you looked at some of the stats where Aaron Murray, at one point they showed some stats in the second half and it said he was 7 for 7 in the second half with like over 120 yards. And you did kind of scratch your head a little bit. And you're like, well, why are they throwing more if he's just being so accurate? But what do you think the reason for that was?
You know, I do have one point there. At the beginning of the game, they ran for, I believe, a 76-yard touchdown.
I think it was 75-yard.
75. So, I mean, obviously, they did have some big plays in the running game, and then it just kind of dried up. So I thought maybe they saw something where they thought. But, I agree to a certain extent, you know, why did you go away from the well? I don't know that the well was dry quite yet, you know. And then when you were able to just pass the ball down the field right there at the end, you know, you do question, well, why did you get away from something that might work? I don't know. Yeah, you have some questions, but at the same time, you've got a couple really good running backs.
Yeah, and you do have some really good running backs. And when you do get to the point where the defense knows you're going to throw the ball, that's when the passing
you're in
doesn't
trouble.
Work.
Right, play action is what Georgia always does.
Mm-hmm.
Always. Since Mark Richt has been there, it's always been a play-action game. If you are throwing for 400 yards a game, you're in trouble because you want to balance it so the people on the other team are trying to figure out what you're doing. You can't run a play-action offense unless you respect the run.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not trying to run it some, unfortunately, the run just wasn't working at all.
But both offenses proved that they can – When they're on, both offenses prove that they can be very, very dangerous. I mean, Clemson was humming basically the entire game. There's only a few times where they really seemed like they were slowed down. I mean, they opened up the game with a three and out, but besides
they seemed more efficient, I think.
Yeah, they were very, very efficient. And then Georgia, they scored 35 points. I mean, they scored, you know, a lot of points in that game. And towards the end, when Clemson had a 10-point lead with about 2 minutes left in the game, Georgia they scored a very fast touchdown in a few plays.
Right. I mean, the pedal was still the gas. You know, you could have wilted at that point and just given up, and they didn't. So that's something that you can look at as positive. I still say this, you know, sure, you can always second-guess the play calling in a loss. I mean, you could do that every week. I just, you know, sure, could you not run it quite so much? I don't know, possibly. But if you're throwing every single down, you can be 7 for 7 passing in a half. You're not going to be 18 for 18.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think one of the main keys of this game, home field advantage, was huge. If you've ever been to a game at Death Valley, especially a big game, it is extremely loud. I mean, the way the stadium is set up is in such a way that sound is just trapped in that stadium, and it gets very, very, very loud, and it can be very disorienting, especially if you're trying to communicate with other people around you. And I think that it's very, very – you can look at a lot of the things that happen in the game and see where – home field advantage was a big deal. One thing that I like to look at is penalties. Clemson had 5 penalties for 38 yards, which, you know, I feel like that's pretty average.
Right.
UGA had 9 for 84. I mean, that's 84 yards. I mean, that's pretty big. A lot of those were false starts, plays where, you know, the line wasn't hearing each other.
And then
they were hearing
the delay of game in there.
There was
also
a delay of game
so
in there.
So that's the same situation.
Yep. And then there was a couple like blocking below the waist penalties that hurt them. And then,
but at the same time, I think you also say penalties didn't have too much of a factor in the game. I mean, there wasn't a game-changing penalty.
No, but I guess I just say that to say that that the crowd did have an effect.
Absolutely.
And I think that the crowd, the largest effect that the crowd had, and what you could probably point to as one of the game-changing moments,
the field goal.
The field goal.
Yeah, you look at that. I think that that's going to be a snap that long snapper will want to have back for a long time. I mean, I don't think he's going to sleep tonight. And I mean, you know, when you're in that situation where the crowd is incredibly loud, I'm sure it, like you're saying, I mean, hard to hear the snap count, that kind of stuff, and he just snapped it high. It just wasn't a great snap.
Yeah.
And it's go ahead, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, on the long snapper, I mean, we were talking earlier, Andrew, and you had talked about an article that you read about long snappers.
And you're about to bring that up, and I can't.
The game.
Yeah, you're about to bring that up, and I can't remember the guy's name. But yes, pretty interesting about this trend that a lot of schools are moving towards, is saying, hey, we need to put a long snapper on scholarship because it is such a really important part of the game. And I wish I could remember who said it, but there was a coach who said, I know I'm going to sleep a lot better on a night when I know I've got a good long snapper. So you just, it's one of those positions where you're not going to get as much press as a quarterback or running back, but if you don't have somebody who can snap that ball, it's the difference. It's the difference in the game.
Oh, I mean, but so many times, I mean, how many times in big games, in college football games, does like special teams, like a field goal, like have, or a punt or something so big? I mean, I think back to the 2004 Clemson Georgia Tech game where there's a long snapper for Clemson that I mean, I don't know if you remember this game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
he hiked the ball, and it was just a horrible, horrible snap to the punter, and Georgia Tech was able to recover it on like the 16-yard line or something like that.
All Clemson had to do in that game was punt the ball away.
That's it. And
I mean, all they had to do,
10 seconds left on the clock.
And right, and that drive was just basically Clemson, you know, falling apart there because you can't get a first down, so you got to punt it. You can't snap the ball, and those kinds of errors are things that you can't do over the stretch.
Yeah,
and those little things, and the guy's name, and going back to this, this guy's name is Chris Rubio, and he considers himself the guru of long snappers, and he runs a camp where he says, "Hey, if you're a long snapper, come to my camp. You know, I'll rate you," and he rates all the best long snappers, and he says, "If you're one of my top long snappers that comes to my camp, you're going to get a scholarship because the coaches listen to me." So, pretty interesting stuff if you're interested in long snapping.
Yeah. So definitely, I mean, I'm really interested, and I'm going to do some more research because I would like to know if Georgia has a long snapper on scholarship.
Or if it was a walk-on. Yeah.
Because
I don't
know. That's something that is, you know, that changed the game because you make that field goal. And I feel like, I mean, you tied up the game at that point, and I feel like the game could have been completely different. And if everything would have stayed the same, then that last touchdown ties the game instead of forces them to a situation where
they're at the beginning of the game, kick. What did Dabo Swinney say? He said six plays are going to be determining the game. I mean, and that's what a lot of coaches stand by. There's always going to be a few big plays, and you want them to swing your way.
Mm-hmm.
There it is right there. One of the big plays swung their way,
won
the game.
One more thought on this game before we move on. What does this win mean for both Clemson and UGA?
I mean, it's not a conference game, you know. I think that if you're University of Georgia, you've had several times that I can think of. I mean, this one and then the other one that immediately jumps out is losing to Boise State a few years ago, where you lost an early non-conference game. It doesn't mean a whole lot, you know.
It can, sure.
But it's a non-conference game. It's a good tune-up for the conference. I mean, what you're trying to do is win the conference.
Yeah.
Always. You know, you might win the national championship. Sure, anybody. But two teams are going to play in that game. You have a much better, more realistic chance if your goal, season in and out, is to win your conference, mm-hmm. then let the other things kind of fall into place. So your goal hasn't changed. You want to win the conference if you're Clemson. You want to win the conference if you're Georgia. you're still 0-0 in the SEC and the ACC. It's a big win for Clemson. Huge win for Clemson. It gets them on the radar. But it's not a terrible loss for Georgia at all. I mean, I don't know how you can look at it that way. There's a lot to build on there, and it's not a conference loss.
Yeah.
So anytime that you lose a game like this, you can build off of it. So
the way I see it is I feel like Georgia can absorb this loss and still be in the talk for a national championship. I mean, how many times in the last few years has a one-loss SEC team played in the national championship? And it generally takes an undefeated non-SEC team to get into the national championship, especially in the last few years.
Right.
I mean, look at 2 years ago when we had two one-loss SEC teams in the national championship. I mean, if you're in the SEC, you get the benefit of the doubt. And with the ACC, if Clemson had have lost that game and went out the rest of the season, including winning the ACC championship game, I don't think that you have a chance to get into the championship game. But now that they've won, I feel like the win means more for Clemson than it would have meant for Georgia.
Right. I agree. But at the same time, I still say it's too early to start.
No, it's definitely too early. Definitely too early. But Clemson, their schedule, it works out really well because their tough games are spread out. If their three toughest games are Georgia, Florida State, and South Carolina, those games are all spread out. Like Georgia at the beginning, Florida State, in the middle, and then South Carolina at the end of the season. So South Carolina, Clemson, they should feel pretty confident moving forward. But you got to get through Maryland. For some reason, they kept making that point during the game that Maryland is going to be the team that's going to knock Clemson off. But
do we want to go ahead and address Maryland, Will?
No.
Our listeners want?
We'll get to Maryland in a little bit. Let's move on. We've dwelled on this too much.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech played Elon today, and
it's not a real team.
It's not a real team. You know, they're basically air. But Georgia Tech won pretty big, 70-0. They had 557 yards on offense. One thing that I thought was interesting, a couple things. They scored on every possession except for one, and they were kind of pinned on the 5-yard line. And that was Justin Thomas. That was his first crack at it. And so not a very good way to start your college career, being pinned back in the 5-yard line. But besides that one possession, Tech scored on every single possession that they had the ball. Nine different players scored touchdowns. We had 10 touchdowns, nine different ones scored. The only one that was a repeat was Sims. He had a receiving touchdown and a rushing touchdown. We had two pick sixes, which was fun to watch. One of them was a 95-yarder, which ties the Georgia Tech record. And one thing that I thought was interesting is the yards after interception. We had three interceptions, and the yards after the interceptions. Does that make sense?
I understand. I'm sure we've got a pretty intelligent listeners.
Oh yeah, definitely.
You know, I think they can figure it out.
It was a Georgia Tech record. Like, I don't know if you knew that, Andrew, but
I did not.
It broke a Georgia Tech record for yards after. So, big win. Lots of scoring. I mean, you can't really complain too much about a 70-0 loss. But what did you think, Andrew? What is your takeaway?
Well, there's one first thing, and I'm just going to go ahead and get out, that I want to make a really ridiculously early prediction on something that could be completely wrong. But based on the football that I saw today, I think that when Georgia Tech plays Virginia Tech, we can out-Beamer ball.
I agree with you.
Because here's the thing. I know you're going to say a lot of great things about our special teams, so I'll let you have that a little bit. Virginia Tech, special teams-wise today, was just not there. They had, I believe it was a kickoff and a punt return. There were two special teams returns for touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those kinds of things are the kinds of things that you are used to seeing Virginia Tech do in the old days. They're not doing it, and they have definitely fallen off big time. I mean, that was obvious. We did not expect them to beat Alabama, but there are things that you expect a Virginia Tech team to be good at, defense and special teams.
Yeah.
Special teams-wise, I don't know what's going on, but they are not – I mean, they're not doing it. And we have put a lot of emphasis at Georgia Tech on special teams, obviously. So when it comes down to it, when we play them, I think that we have a strong chance of out-special teaming them.
Well, what in particular, Andrew, did you see from us today that tells you that we're going to be able to be, I guess, well, better than them in special
teams? The first thing is this. I'm not incredibly concerned about them running a kickback for a touchdown against us.
Yeah, I agree. If there's one thing to be excited about, I mean, 70 points, that's awesome. I mean, Vadley looked really good. I mean, just to say something quick about Vadley, I mean, there's really not much to dwell on here, but he made all of his reads. I didn't really feel like he made too many mistakes. I mean, I'm sure Paul Johnson will find mistakes that he made, but Vadley looked great. I mean, he passed the ball well. He was 7 for 11 with like 180 yards passing. He had like 40-something yards rushing with a rushing touchdown. He pitched the ball well. He handed the ball off at the right times. I mean, the mesh, like everybody likes to talk about, was good. But what I was most excited about from this game was Harrison Butker, our freshman place kicker.
My opinion is, I mean, you waste a scholarship on a kicker. That's just unbelievable.
Those are walk-ons. You don't give a scholarship to a kicker. But,
absolutely.
But no, I mean, almost every single kick that he kicked was a touchback. And if we can expect that for the next 4 years, man, that's really exciting. Because
it's a game changer. It changes the field
of possession. So many times, there's big games where it came down to the end and we, you know, we kicked it off and they returned it like to like the 40-yard line.
And you're playing with a short field and already. Yeah. Your defense is, you know, back against the wall. Yeah, and you haven't even played it down.
And you know, I'm not crazy about, you know, touchbacks being at the 25 now, but man, if that's where they're gonna start every single time, like, so
I'm
be it. That's
it, yeah.
Fine with me. So, but yeah, Butker looked really good kicking the ball. Several of them went, like, not just landed in the end zone, but went
and
out
not
the
only
back
that,
of the end zone.
You forget, at the beginning of the game, we blocked a punt.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's another special teams thing that was big.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I don't know the last time we did that. I mean, I'm sure someone can email us and let us know at fourthandshortpodcast@gmail.com.
But just a little plug. Just a little plug.
Make sure you're emailing us. But, you know, I think that those are just things where you obviously have said, look, we've got to get better at special teams. We can't be a one-trick pony in the sense that there are three facets to the game. You can't just be good at offense. If you're good at offense or if you're great at offense and you're terrible at special teams and defense, you're going to lose more than you win.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to find other ways to make improvements. You got to be good at all three facets. And if we can continue to do these kinds of things where we're getting touchbacks, where we're, you know, blocking an occasional punts, you know, just wrecking havoc on these special teams plays, then I think, you know, just if you have good punt and kick coverage, I mean, that is fantastic.
Yeah.
That puts your defense in a position where they can win.
Yeah. One thing that we didn't get to see, and I'm really excited for when we will get to see that, is Harrison Butker go for a long field goal.
Right.
That's not something that we've really been able to do the last few years, especially go for, like, in the 50-plus yard range. And, man, like, so many games. I mean, every single week in college football, you'll see a game that comes down to a kick at the end of the game. And
we saw one, I mean, this week where they, you know, that's all of those areas, the long snapper, the kicker. I mean, all that's a facet of that special teams unit.
Definitely.
You know, in that Georgia Clemson game, it didn't work. And so you're right. You're right. Exactly. How many times? It happens quite often. Like, the unfortunate part for us is we just keep scoring touchdowns.
Yeah. What's the deal with that? That's crazy. So,
as long as that goes on.
One more thing. One of the things that I was going through some of the forums and whatnot, and one of the concerns that I kept seeing was that our defense gave up 253 yards.
Right.
Does that concern you at all?
Not yet. It doesn't yet, because here's the thing. Every year we play this no-name team, and we'll win the game 56-10 or 70-0, whatever. And so every year we seem to get to this point where we're like, yeah, the defense looks better. And so now it happens again where you give up 250 yards and people are, instead of saying, yeah, we look better, they're so concerned, they're nitpicking every little thing. You know, I mean, you get to that point when you've seen it before against a, you know, a subpar competition, you look better. Well, then you're just afraid, well, it's just a mirage.
Mm-hmm.
So I really think people are just nitpicking every little thing. You had a couple interceptions.
Three interceptions.
You had turnovers.
Yeah,
I mean, turnovers are huge.
Mm-hmm.
If you're creating turnovers, then that's one half the battle. We weren't creating turnovers. Sure, maybe you're not getting to the quarterback, but I don't really think we're rushing the house every play either.
No, and their offense was, I mean, they were getting rid of the ball pretty quick. I mean, we only sacked the quarterback one time, but it's not like they were hanging out in the pocket very long. I mean, the quarterback was getting it and throwing really quick passes. I think that was just kind of the nature of their offense.
But if you're getting interceptions, then obviously you're doing some disruption to the quarterback.
Yeah.
So, I mean, take it for what it is. You're right. I mean, there are some things that could be concerning, but when we play some big competition and we give up 60 points, then we have reason to be concerned, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. And another thing,
I would like to mention the player that I spoke about last week
as
being somebody that might look out for. Paul Davis, I think, could be a player. He was flying around the field today. True freshman.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he could be a player.
He really, and it's not just his number. He's number 40, but he really, really reminded me of Julian Burnett. How Julian Burnett was, he was always there, where the ball was and making the tackles.
Just had really good instincts on the ball.
Yep, and when he was on the field, it always seemed like he was around the ball and where the tackle was made. One other thing I just want to throw out there about the 253 yards that our defense gave up. We also have to remember that our defense was on the field a lot during the game because we were scoring so many times.
Right.
Elon had 12 possessions. And when you average it out, it's 21 yards per possession is what it averaged out to. So when you look at it that way, it doesn't really seem so bad. If Elon would have had, 8 possessions, which I feel like it's a more standard number, and the 21 stay the same, then you're looking at 160 yards. And normally you look at that and you're like, oh, yeah, 160 yards, they didn't get much. That's a success. So, I mean, I think a lot of it was we were scoring, and we were scoring quickly, and that was leaving our defense out on the field. Elon actually had beat us pretty bad in time of possession. I think they had six more minutes than us during the game, which is funny because they didn't score anything.
Right.
But one final question, make this really quick, Andrew. Do you feel better about Tech, or was this just Elon? Do you not feel anything? It's just completely neutral.
I mean, I feel good because I feel good about special teams, but everything else was just kind of as expected. I mean, I didn't think this was going to be a close game.
Yeah. The one thing that I thought was encouraging was Vad Lee didn't really have to run the ball.
Right.
Until the second half. It's almost like he was going out there trying not to run the ball himself. Because we knew from last year
he can. Right.
And a lot of those games that he was in there, he wouldn't pitch the ball or he wouldn't hand the ball off and he would take it himself. So, and I mean, he did well in those situations.
Right.
But we were always, during the offseason, it was like, well, can he, can he run
the offense? He's got to learn. Yeah, he's got to learn to, manage a game.
And I felt like he did a really good job of getting the ball into the hands of the people that it needed to be in. And when things get tough, we know that he can, take the ball himself. So I was very encouraged. I thought it was a great game and a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, you're right. It was very hot, but it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on,
right?
Let's pause real quick.
Okay,
is that okay? Can we pause?
Yes, pausing.
One of the things that happened right after we recorded the last podcast was the NCAA ruled on the Johnny Manziel autograph signing scandal thing.
Right.
And he got a half game suspension for the game versus Rice. Andrew, I don't want to spend much time on this. 3 minutes. I want to spend 3 minutes on this.
Okay, this is a joke, is what it is.
Okay.
It's an absolute joke. I mean, this was very frustrating to me because my problem is this went on for, what was it, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
This was the news every single day.
Yeah.
And my question for you simply is, did you think he was guilty beforehand?
Most people thought that he was.
Most people said, gosh, he is guilty as sin. Because the way this was presented was he did it. We've got some guy who says that Johnny Manziel gave, you know, all these autographs and was paid for them. Okay.
And there's pictures. And
yeah, sure. Yeah, he did it. He had to have done it. All this, he got all this money. And he said, well, so the NCAA comes in and does what they always do and, you know, says, okay, well, we'll interview him and he's going to, you know, what are you going to get him to do? Confess?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to me, it's an absolute joke because it's just they have no real power in the situation. They want you to think they do, but they don't. They can't subpoena anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to come in and just meet with Johnny Manziel for 6 hours. Well, what's he going to say?
That he didn't do it.
That he didn't do it. So then, who do you believe? Do you believe a quarterback for Texas A&M, or do you believe some guy who says that, yeah, Johnny Manziel was signing autographs? Now, the problem I have is
that they suspended him. They gave him a suspension.
They gave him a suspension because if they had any shred of evidence, anything, he would be gone for the season.
At least half the season,
right?
I think.
If they had anything, that means because they didn't do that, that they had nothing, and this was just a big show.
But then, why did they suspend him? Like, I don't understand.
I don't know.
Like, if because I feel like you either, I mean, it's I feel like it's a pretty black or white issue here. Like,
right.
And I know that they kind of came back and they're like, well, we can't.
I mean, they said it was an inadvertent violation, meaning that we came in here, we believe you did it, we can't prove that you did it, we have no proof, but we think you did. So we're going to give this so that everybody else is afraid and says, oh, we won't do it. And that's the whole point, is that this was just to find the big player so that everybody can be afraid of us, of what we can do.
But see, because I feel like they came away really weak, though.
Absolutely. Because, look, this goes on and on and on. And what was the line? Will Texas A&M suspend him? Will they not? What they wanted to happen, they wanted Texas A&M to say, well, until the NCAA rules on it, we won't play him.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want to happen. That way, because the NCAA can't really force you to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So they want you, because look, if Texas A&M would come out and say, okay, well, the NCAA is investigating all this stuff, let them take their time, we'll just not play Johnny Manziel for fear of the NCAA until you figure it out. Well, then they could have gone for 5-6 games. And we've seen it happen time and time again where they do this investigating during the season. So these players sit down because he might, maybe will be ruled ineligible. But through this, we've seen that the NCAA has no power in this.
Yeah.
None. And it's, to me, just an absolute joke. And it shows more and more there's nothing they can do. The stuff that's going on with all of these players suing the NCAA for, you know, using their images and their likenesses. I mean, this could get ugly because they have no power. All of these players are finding loopholes, ways that, you know, hey, I can figure out a way to earn money on this. And there's nothing the NCAA can do about it. It's always going to be he said, she said.
I just want some consistency.
Right.
And I bring up two examples. And
okay.
they're from our state over the last few years.
Okay.
A couple years ago, AJ Green, from the receiver from Georgia, playing the NFL now.
And Georgia did what the NCAA wanted them to do, and they sat him down.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll figure this out in our time.
Yeah.
We'll just, you know, you just sit him down, and when we are ready, we'll rule on it. But until then, you just have to do what we want, because he might be ineligible.
Yeah. So he set out 4 games for selling a jersey that was, like, his own. Like, he sold clothes, and yeah, that was a violation. And he made money off of that, but it was like nowhere near what kind of money we're talking about with Manziel. And it was like a one time, like he sold his jersey.
Seeing that the NCAA has no power.
Yeah.
That they can't do anything.
But
if you fight them, they can't do anything.
Yeah. But it really does bug me. I mean, when it was happening, I was like, well, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm a Tech fan, so I was kind of like, well, you know, you should have known better. But it really was like, you know, when you look at it in the context of this, it really is frustrating.
Right, absolutely.
Because he gets four games off and Johnny Manziel sits out a half against Rice.
Same thing. There was the guy for Oklahoma State. Same thing. Brian, he sat six games down. He even, I believe he tweeted about it, asking why he had to sit down for six games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. If you are a fan of those schools, you have a legitimate question for why did this happen.
Yeah, and then you look at Georgia Tech, and you look at the situation that we went through a few years ago where our ACC championship was taken away because Demaryius Thomas unknowingly accepted a gift from, you know, an agent runner, and he turned himself in. And, I mean, and our championship was taken away because we – basically because we played Demaryius Thomas while he was being investigated.
Well, the issue was they said that we, by telling Demaryius Thomas – what was about to happen, that he's going to be that he was going to be interviewed, we tampered with the investigation. Okay, well, here's my question. Johnny Manziel, did he know he was about to be investigated?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Like that was a secret.
Yeah.
That's just ridiculous. Absolutely unbelievable. And that if you're talking about consistency, there's none there.
No.
Because the NCAA wants to have this thing where they say, well, we're going to keep it a secret. But in the current age we live in,
it's almost impossible.
It is impossible. And so if you're a school, would you rather that the school goes and says, hey, to the athlete, listen, you know, you better say the right thing. Or would you rather him hear about it through other ways and have other people? How would you like a runner to come to him and say, here's what you need to say? I mean, you don't know. You know, you don't. So it is incredibly inconsistent, and they have all of these different things. And for instance, the investigator who investigated our case, he no longer works for the NCAA. I believe in the last 3 years, it's like four or five people who worked in that department and for actions have stepped down for various reasons because of the corruption. Look at the Miami case. Tampering, basically they, what did they do? They were essentially paying off somebody to help them with the case against Miami. So, I mean, there's a lot of corruption there.
Definitely.
Still. And a lot of questions. I mean, it's a problem.
Yeah.
And the NCAA is going to, I mean, if they're not careful, I mean, they might cease to exist.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's an issue. I mean, they should be very worried. And I think a lot of people have a lot of questions about the way Mark Emmert, the president of the NCAA, has run this. Because if you listen to the things that he has said in recent conferences, he pretty much says business as usual, we're doing great. When most people around the NCAA say that he's kind of living in a bubble. It's not business as usual. We have a lot of issues. And what are the things that you're most worried about? Well, we're going to let coaches, now they can send all the mail they want to recruits. That's the improvement you make. You know, if you've got issues, one of them is not that recruits can't get unlimited mail and have unlimited recruiting staff. So,
yeah. Anyway, we talked way more than 3 minutes about this.
Yes, so we're done.
Yeah, we're done. Let's get back to the games. So last week, Andrew and I, we went through and we made picks for the different games. And so far, I believe all of them have been played with the exception of one, and that is FSU Pitt.
And that's going to be FSU. Gonna, we don't need
that.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter. Sorry, all of our Pitt listeners out there, but we're pretty sure that FSU is going to win that game. So
I mean, you got to play the game.
You got to play the game, but
so let's go through.
Let's just start from the top like we did last time. We'll go game by game real quick. If we have some additional thoughts, then we'll go. But start at the beginning. UNC South Carolina. We both picked South Carolina to win this game, which they did. A couple of things I learned from this game. My main takeaway is that. And again, I don't want to go, you know, spend too much time on each individual game because we have a lot of games to go through. But
Carolina might not be, they might not be as good as we thought.
And that goes for both Carolinas.
Yeah, that's true.
I felt like North Carolina's offensive line was pushed around. They didn't have very many weapons on offense. And South Carolina's offense looked okay at times, but
very pedestrian.
Very pedestrian. A lot of times. Clowney, you know, a lot's being made over Clowney's performance, but it seems that he did have a stomach virus going into the game, and that could, you know, explain
and
why he
you know, here's my thing. Look, South Carolina won the game. If Clowney's taking plays off, I'm sure he'll be, you know, reprimanded internally.
Mm-hmm.
And let the season play on.
Yeah, yeah.
Really. I mean, like, what every... He's getting a lot of press for something that, to me, is just a little bit insignificant. Let the coaches handle it. And then if they lose a game because Clowney isn't playing, well, then that's on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Next game, though, is a little bit of interesting.
Yeah, Miami and Ford Atlantic. Ford Atlantic shouldn't have...
It shouldn't have been that close.
It shouldn't have been. It was 34-6. I mean, which, you know, doesn't look like a big deal, but I mean, it wasn't really the runaway that you would expect.
In some ways, I would say Miami looked pedestrian.
A little bit. I mean, Duke Johnson had a good game. He had 186 rushing yards.
You know, something is, we'll see. You know, don't make too much out of this if you're a Miami fan. First game. You know, we'll let it play.
Yeah.
The conference games are going to happen.
Yep.
We'll see what happens.
Yep. So, next one, Elon, Georgia Tech. We talked about that in length. Georgia Tech wins. Villanova, Boston College.
Boston College, you know, they did what they needed to do.
Yep. Yep. there's a lot of comment about this next game, Andrew. From some of our listeners that I heard from over the last few days.
And we're really happy to have the comments.
Yeah. Thank you for the comments. Definitely. But, Andrew.
So what was this one, Will?
This one was Florida International versus Maryland. And, Andrew, you picked Florida International, and right. a lot of my friends, a lot of listeners.
So you're saying that your friends are the only ones who listen?
No, there's other people, but
okay.
They were too embarrassed to send an email.
Honestly, I feel like all of our listeners are our friends.
That's true.
Anyway, okay.
That's true.
The game, Florida International, Maryland. The honest problem is that in my crystal ball, I saw there was going to be a huge upset, and I turned it a little bit to the left.
Turned it up to 11.
Little bit up to the left. And it actually, you know, what it should have said is that Kansas State was going to go down to North Dakota State. So
but
that
that's
was,
not really an upset. Come on.
I mean, it was a little bit of an upset. So, or actually the fact that Oregon State lost to, they lost to a 1AA team. I'm sure one of our listeners could tell us. Eastern Washington.
That's
sorry
it.
About
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I saw a little bit
you just
differently.
Picked, it's okay. I you
know it's one of those things. And not, my thing is this: you got to pick a wild upset this early in the season because there's going to be one or two of them, you know. So
there you
win
go.
Some, you lose some. I lost.
Yep.
So
next one is Louisiana Tech and NC State. NC State
looked pretty good.
Yeah, 40-14.
You know,
took care of business.
So I think taking care of business. I think that offensive system looks like it could be the real deal in some ways.
Yeah, we'll see. Syracuse lost to Penn State. We both had Penn State winning that game. It was closer.
It was a lot closer.
It was pretty close. 23-17 was the final on that one, and it kind of came down to the end. Syracuse had a chance to win it at the end.
And I think the thing there for me is that people are not giving Syracuse any respect at all.
Mm-hmm.
They might be a little bit better than anticipate. I mean, this is a team that did very well last year, and I think people felt like their coach left. They lost several players for the NFL, so they weren't going to be any good. But you know what? They might be a little better than people expect. This could be a bowl team.
Yep. The next one is one that I got wrong, but you got right. That's BYU and Virginia. Pleasantly surprised that Virginia won this game. It was a close one. 19-16, but
early season. I think that, you know, Virginia has some good athletes on that team. BYU is running more of a up-tempo offense this year, and I think that, you know, they kind of struggled to get that offense.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that game, and yeah, they were running a lot of hurry up,
and I just think it didn't really connect very well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, and they have a lot of new players in offense too.
Right, interesting to see. We'll see where Virginia goes from here. Good, definitely good win for them.
Mm-hmm. Next one, NC Central, North Carolina Central, and Duke. I mean, they played well. They won that game, so good for them. Let's see.
Alabama BT.
Virginia Tech.
Once again, like we talked about a little bit, special teams.
Yeah.
Big difference in that game. Special
but, you know,
teams
there
and
were,
turnovers.
But Virginia Tech did show some signs of life, especially early on in the game. They in the second quarter, they almost looked like they were going to give Alabama a run for their money. Their defense was playing very well, and their offense seemed to be getting on track. But Logan Thomas, I mean,
turnovers were an issue. Turnovers definitely an issue. You can't do that if you're a senior quarterback.
Yeah,
that's a big problem.
Yeah, I feel like he's just not the guy that everybody thought he was going to be a couple of years ago.
Right.
That
basically rounds up ACC.
Yeah, and then UGA Clemson. With Clemson getting that, and we both called that, so good for us. One takeaway from the ACC in their schedule: three games the ACC lost: Syracuse, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Alabama, and UNC, South Carolina. Other than that, everybody else won. There's no embarrassing losses. I mean, I feel like the conference did all right for this first week of the season.
Yeah, seem good.
Mm-hmm. So, let's go right into the
this first SEC pick is one that I'm pretty happy about. Will,
yeah, I know. The first game was on Thursday night. It was Ole Miss Vandy, and this game was close. I mean,
that was the definition of a barn burner game. Really, both teams looked good.
And man, I was really impressed with Vandy's receiver. Oh gosh, Matthews. I don't know if you watched that game. He took a shot pretty late in the fourth quarter, and it looked like they were gonna have to take him out of the game because he was throwing up in the field.
Yeah, I did see that.
He took maybe one or two plays off, came back in, made a big catch on fourth down to set up, to get first down, and then the very next play, Vandy scored a touchdown. And it looked like Vandy was gonna win it because there's only like 90 seconds left in the clock, But Ole Miss just went right down the field and scored again. And then Vandy, I think, had a turnover to end the game. But that was a fun game. That was an entertaining game. I had Vandy winning that game, but Ole Miss came through. They had a lot of their freshmen playing in that game, including Nikajima or whatever his name is. I can't say
Nikanichi, I think.
Well, yeah, the guy that they stole from Clemson there at the end. The next one, Toledo, Florida. We both picked Florida, but you know what? They didn't score a lot of points.
I think it's what I said earlier. You know, look, Florida, I'm a little bit buying into it more and more. They're not ever going to win pretty. You know, they just play the rugged defense, and that's what they do. They're not going to score a whole lot. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, they won the game. That's all they needed to do. So
24-6.
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into it. Let's just wait for the conference. Same thing with the Rice A&M.
Yeah.
A&M put up a ton of points. It's what you expected it to do. You know, it is what it is. Manziel, you know, the issues on the field.
He was benched.
Yeah, just play the game.
Taunting, so.
You know, we don't need to see that.
Yeah,
so.
I agree. Mississippi State, Oklahoma State. I feel like that game was a little bit closer than people thought it was going to be.
I still think Oklahoma State has quite the offense they once did, but it didn't matter. Mississippi State, Dan Mullen had a good few years there at the beginning. You know, I just don't know that he's able to sustain it there.
Oh, excuse me. That one was not as close as people thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah, I mean, it was 21-3, I think. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I just think Dan Mullen might have some issues there in Starkville. We'll see. We'll see. Let the conference games go on, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Same thing, Arkansas. I mean, they did what you expected. Yes. They win the game. These games, they're early on. Same thing, Austin Peay, UT. You expect it to be big. It was. The next one, the Washington State-Auburn, I really thought Mike Leach had a you know, a trick up his sleeve with that one. Will, you went the reliable Auburn. I mean, it was a good pick. I mean, it was a close game.
Yeah,
what
was the final now in 31-24?
31-24. I think that Washington State might be better this year. I think they could be a bowl team. But
you know, that might be a game where home field advantage. I mean, it was at Auburn.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's a long trip for Washington State.
It's a long trip for Washington State. Now, this one, let's go ahead and say Missouri over Murray State, exactly what you expect.
Yeah. And, just so we know, Andrew, you picked Washington State. I picked Auburn. So
yes,
and then we both
true.
Picked Missouri over Murray State.
Right, and then the TCU LSU. Will, you said TCU is going to upset that one.
Yeah,
I said LSU. Neutral site, I don't know if really affected that much.
I mean,
much,
it wasn't
so.
A blowout at 37-27. So, I mean, you know, relatively close game. I think TCU had a lead at one point. But, yeah, it is what it is. I mean, LSU
now,
is LSU.
Let me go ahead and get into the email that we got about our friend. I mean, he's not my friend. I don't think he's actually anybody's friend. But Bobby Petrino at Western Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, really showing why he is a great coach. Let me give you a few stats. Since Bobby Petrino has been coaching, 9-0 in season openers. Okay, when he has more than 2 weeks to prepare, 28-8
wow.
in his career.
Wow.
Western Kentucky scored on three of the first four possessions. Okay, so Western Kentucky beats Kentucky. The game, you know, wasn't terribly close. Western Kentucky did beat Kentucky last year by a point, but this game was not a 1 point, you know, sneak out of there with a win.
Mm-hmm.
This was decisive. Bobby Petrino is an excellent football coach.
Snake.
An absolute snake. I don't know why you would want him to run your program except for the fact that he's going to win games.
Yeah.
No, he's going to win games for you.
Yeah.
You bring him in, he is going to win a lot of games for you. And if you are okay with the fact, I mean, look, if I'm an athletic director and I'm worried about my job, I know that if I have Bobby Petrino there,
oh yeah,
you're going to be safe because he's going to win you some games and fans are going to come and that's going to be money in the account.
And if there's problems, so, then you know that's going to be pointed at Petrino and not you.
Not you. Exactly. So Bobby Petrino does what he does. He won the game. I think that Western Kentucky this year could win a lot of games. They could be a real sleeper team this year.
Mm-hmm. My record for this week was 19-3, and Andrew, you were 20-2. So you have a one game lead on me.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah. So good job. Good picks. So, but we both did good. I mean, only three wrong, but. So good job.
Thank you.
So we'll keep track of that as the season goes on. It'll be interesting to see how we do going forward. I'd like to know how we do, against some of the experts that are actually paid to do this.
I'd say we do very well.
So, anyway, I think that, about wraps it up. What do you think, Andrew?
Oh, I'm nobody's listening now. I'm sure it's 3 o'clock in the morning.
No,
I mean,
no, it's not. What are you talking about? That's ridiculous. Anyway, we are going to wrap this up. Thank you so much for listening to the 4th and Short podcast. My name is Will Patton. I'm joined by Andrew Brown. Oh, I'm sorry. I stole your thunder. I'm joined by
Andrew Brown.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in next time.